latest edition of the ATL All Day Podcast. I'm Carlos Collazo here with Brad Stein, Eric Graff, and Drew Wilburn. And today we're going to be talking exclusively Braves baseball. So how are you guys doing?
Good.
Good, man.
All right, we're going to start it off with some trade deadline talk. I know a lot of people in baseball were talking about how this was one of the more boring and quiet deadlines of all time, actually. That was brought up a bit. What do you guys think about the deadline just as a whole, as far as Major League Baseball goes? Not necessarily Braves-specific. Anyone can take this.
Well, Go ahead, Drew.
You first.
Okay, then. I felt like it was pretty boring for the most part. I mean, ever since that the Major Leagues introduced that second wild card, it's kind of, you know, add up the ante a little bit where you can't just dump off some of these, you know, prospects that you have down in single A. You know, you want some guys that you want that are almost major league ready now. So I think the asking prices might be a little too high for some of these teams that are so far out. You know, you look at the White Sox. I mean, they wanted some MLB ready pitchers and infielders and you name it, and they got it with Iglesias. And I felt like for the most part it was pretty boring.
Yeah, and there wasn't really a whole bunch of big names out there that were getting dealt around. Jake Peavy was one of the biggest deals of the entire deadline. So, and also the Mariners, I don't know why they didn't trade any of their guys, but they were asking the world for all three of their outfielders, and that was kind of interesting to see, I guess. But yeah, it was pretty quiet. Eric or Drew, any thoughts?
I thought I lost what I was going to say a minute ago. So,
well, how about the Braves? We picked up a guy named Scott Downs. What do you guys? What are your thoughts on him, Eric?
I like Scott Downs.
Yeah.
Eric, you actually faced him, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, back in the day, he was older than me, so you know I didn't really fare so well. But that's a story for another podcast.
Well, I mean,
he's a quality lefty. He's been a good pitcher. He's been great, actually. About the past 7 years, I was looking up his stats, and his ERA is in the low twos. And I know ERA is not everything, but he gets lefties out, plain and simple. That's what we need.
Yep, I feel like that was really the one need that was obvious that we had, and Frank Wren addressed it. I was thinking he might go for a bench bat, but with Turdoslovich coming up and doing well, that wasn't really a necessity. So I like the Scott Downs pickup as well. Brad, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I felt like, and you know, outside, you know, my Kentucky bias, I felt like it was actually a very good pickup. The Braves needed somebody from the left-handed side to kind of give Avalon, you know, just some time off, because you know you can only go so far with just a few lefties, and I feel like, you know, the Braves didn't necessarily give up a ton for him, but I felt like he came at a pretty reasonable price for the most part. And I think, you know, when you look at his stats, like Eric said, you needed somebody who can come in and get guys out when you need it the most, and he, you know, proved that within a matter of, you know, just landing in Atlanta, came in and just threw one pitch and got out of a jam that he was kind of just thrown into. So I think that kind of speaks volumes for Scott Downs, and, you know, he's been there before. So I feel like, you know, I think the Braves made a pretty smart move and essentially just laying low and acquiring just one guy. Now, does that mean that they aren't going to go out and get somebody, you know, past the trade deadline? I don't know. I think we still need somebody up in the middle, like a middle infielder that can hit from the left-hand side.
Yeah, that was epic. The way he came in, and you know, he was an angel that morning. Flew in, didn't even get to the park till after the game already started, and gets thrown in to a bases loaded game on the line situation against Todd Helton. One pitch, one line drive, one catch, and he's out of the jam. So I thought that was actually kind of a crappy situation for them to put him in, because if he fails there, which was a very large possibility, he would have already been behind the eight ball with a lot of our fans. It kind of was a bad situation I thought to put him in, but you know, he came out roses, and now everybody loves him.
Yeah, it was definitely cool to see, and it was funny because they were talking about that situation on the Braves broadcast today, And I just think it's funny how the catcher comes out there and is like, hey, man, what pitches do you throw? You don't see that all a lot. But, yeah, I pulled up Downs' splits this season. And against lefties, he's holding batters to a 192, 250, 212 line, which is extremely impressive. And as long as Freddie uses him in the right situations, I think he'll be a really good relief pitcher for us.
The other thing with this trade to think about is, you know, with the deadline deal, you're always – you think about who you're getting, but players – teams also give up a lot of good players sometimes to get what they need. What did we give up? We gave up Rasmus.
Nothing.
I mean, that was nothing.
He was definitely expendable, I think. It's another steal for Frank Wren. And even though it's a low-key deal, I mean, it's not a big player, it's definitely a trade that we won. And with the Angels' situation, I don't know – If they think Rasmus is going to be a piece for them in the future or what, but I don't really see why any team would rather have Rasmus than a good Lukey. But what do you guys think about that?
Well, down the line, will he turn out to be a pretty good pitcher? We don't know. We'll never find out. I mean, we'll find out eventually when he's in an Angels uniform. But you know, in order to get something, you have to give something up, and I think the Braves gave up the right guy.
Agreed. Definitely agreed.
Yeah, they gave up nothing. Yeah, that's why Wren's the master. He gave up nothing. Rasmus could possibly be, you know, at best a long relief guy, but he might not ever even stick in the majors. So
yeah.
And Downs is a guy that we could re-sign even next year.
Mm-hmm.
That I doubt we see O'Flaherty or Ventures ever in a Braves uniform again.
Which would break my heart.
I know, it sucks, but
another
unfortunately, thing. Probably going to be the reality.
Well, okay, so out of those two people, assuming that the Braves actually don't re-sign one of those, who out of those two people do you think that if that situation ever came up, who do you think would not be re-signed? Flaherty or Ventures?
I think they would rather keep Ventures. But
no way.
I don't know.
A second Tommy John?
I mean, it'd be tough. It'd be tough because I'm a huge Johnny Ventures guy.
Oh, Flaherty is going to cost them a lot more. Well, not a lot, but pretty good amount more money.
I don't really see any situation with them re-signing either of them.
I don't think they will either, but if they were going to pick one, then I think they would stick with Ventures.
Well, yeah, O'Flaherty won't even be ready at the beginning of the year. There's no shot.
Mm-hmm.
And Ventures, who knows if they'll ever pitch again. Meaningfully, you never know.
Well, Ventures, with him being an injury risk, could probably come, if he can come back from the injury and everything, would come relatively cheap, I would imagine, just with a risk there. And I mean, with bullpen guys, you always want to get cheap arms rather than overpay, and they just not turn out well for you. Because so many teams overpay for the bullpen, and it's mostly a piece of crap.
Would you say it's kind of a high risk, high reward type of situation then?
If they
we've had enough different pitchers step up to where their roles have really they don't really I don't know if this is the right wording, but they don't really matter as much to the team with Avilon and Varvaro, and I guess you could even throw Downs into it now to where they're not really like guys we have to have in there. The bullpen's been really well with them gone the entire season.
Right.
So I don't think there's a big need to really have either of them back begging and
calling. Either way, Wren has proven that he is like master of assembling a bullpen, so one thing I kind of don't worry about.
Yeah.
Been wonderful at it.
Well, speaking of injuries, I guess this is a good segue into the injuries of our outfielders and Paul Mahalem. I know, Eric, you had a piece up the other day, or was it today even, that just kind of went over all of the Braves' injuries at the time. What do you think about specifically B.J. Upton and Jordan Schaefer's return, when they're going to come back, and the impact they'll have on the team once they get back?
I will say this is a breaking news. Justin just hit another bomb.
That's really good to see because the power has been kind of absent for a while with him, so
awesome.
It's nice to see.
Awesome news, because he's been worrying me. I've been convinced that he was probably going to go DL as soon as BJ and Jordan come back with something wrong, because his power has been just absent.
Been a power outage.
Then two home runs tonight. That's good to see.
Two homers tonight. He hit a couple doubles. He's been on the way back, actually. So, and I know BJ hit a couple doubles tonight too, down in Gwinnett. Last time I saw him, that was only in like the third inning, so I'm sure he got some more at bats.
Okay. All right. You know, I know BJ's scheduled to come back Saturday. Schaefer is tentatively for next week. Is that correct?
Well, they said Schaefer might be getting in this weekend. I don't think they have a setback day for BJ at all. They just said, take your time. I mean, obviously, they don't need him right now, so they said, just take your time, get healthy, work on whatever you got to work on, and we'll get you back whenever you're ready. They said Schaefer may start this weekend as soon as Saturday down in Gwinnett, so...
All right. Yeah, Schaefer
playing so well right now. It's not a time crunch. None of it matters. Just play and get healthy and back to where you were. Take your time, because we're not. The NL East race is over.
It's not over until it's over, because I said the same thing when we were. Yeah, we said the same thing 2 years ago. So I'm skeptical on that. But, I mean, for the most part, Washington and Philadelphia have played just absolutely awful. But I guess my question is if the Braves weren't playing as hot as they are right now, they're obviously en route to win their seventh game in a row. You know, if they were playing like they were, you know, say, dating back to before the All-Star break with the Reds series, and how they kind of struggled on the offensive side and carrying over into the beginning of the after the All-Star break, do you think that there might have been a little bit of a push between, you know, to kind of force BJ Upton to get back healthy and into this lineup?
I definitely think that whenever you have such a big lead and everyone's playing well, there's definitely less pressure to get those guys back in the lineup, because all you're doing is risking further injury. So, yeah, definitely there's not a real need, like Eric said, to get them back in the lineup right away, because we've got an 11-game lead. The Nationals and the Phillies are just treading water, and really, with the way our pitching's been the whole year, combined with the crazy offense we've had lately, there's definitely not a need to get those guys back anytime soon. But I guess my question is, do you guys think the huge lead in the division is more due to how good the Braves team is, or just how bad the Nationals specifically have been, or a combination of the two?
I would have to say it's probably a combination of both. I mean, we knew going into this season that the Nats were going to actually – I thought the Nats were going to be pretty good, but they were really relying on their bullpen. It never really turned out to be that way for Washington. And the Braves, you know, with the signings of BJ, Justin, and Chris Johnson, and so on and so forth, we knew that the Braves were going to be right there at the end. You know, the Phillies were – I kind of thought that they were kind of hanging around, but I mean, they're just old and beat up. And then there were talks on the broadcast tonight about them re-signing Chase Utley to a huge deal, which makes no sense at all.
I think they would learn from the Ryan Howard deal, but
it makes Philly sense.
It makes Ruben Amaro sense. But I mean, I feel like you know, it's kind of been a combination of the both. I was actually hoping the Nats would give us, you know, some competition. But I'm kind of glad now that that they're not.
I don't want the Nationals to give us any competition at all. I'd rather us kill them the whole way than have an interesting and exciting race for the NL East. Yeah. But
love the Nationals peers. They're sustaining me.
The best part about the Nationals being so bad this year is Bryce Harper's comments after games.
Yeah, they're great. They're just absolutely. I cannot stand him.
Yeah, I don't mind him. He's good. He just has a douchey haircut.
Yeah. What's the deal with the hair? I don't understand. Does he just want attention, or?
It's kind of like the male version of Miley Cyrus. Like this awful haircut. That I mean, is just. Go ahead,
yeah,
Drew.
Yeah, clown hair, bro.
Clown question, Brad.
My bad, guys. I'm sorry. I'll stop asking questions here.
All right. So what about the Paul Mahalam injury?
All my life.
Yep, out till I think ideally they'd like to have him start for the Braves August 10th. I think that was the date that you mentioned in your piece.
Yeah, that's the next time. I guess he's eligible to come off DL on the 5th, and his next rotation spot would be on the 10th because, Wood is supposed to start the 4th, which is the day before he gets off, and then his rotation spot will come up again on the 10th, and I guess they're going to see where he's at. I mean, that's not like a scheduled. We want him to pitch today. Yeah. That's just his next available spot. And again, there's no need to rush him with a wrist injury like that. You know, he said it's been lingering for a month. Maybe that could explain why he's been pitching so bad. I don't really know. But he had been pitching for that. So
I would think
they're going to get him back and healthy. And I still don't know what they're going to do about the rotation. That's going to be the big thing. They're going to have 6 pitchers in 5 spots. And I guess if Vici keeps struggling, maybe he'll either go to the pen or they'll send him back down.
Well, I would actually have to go Alex Wood. I think Alex Wood has an absolute bright future with this organization. I just don't think he's ready yet. You know, for them, I like to think, you know, he's still got at least 1 to 2 more years in the minor leagues to fully develop, you know, throwing his off speed pitches for strikes. And I think for the most part, if he were to go back down for another 1-2 years, then I think you could see Alex Wood start to fully develop. But I mean, if you think about it, you know, you're going to rely on a kid that's essentially my age, you know, 23 years old, to go out and try and win you an NLCS, NLDS, World Series, you know, something like that. That's what kind of scares me with Alex Wood in the roots.
Well, yeah, the other guys aren't that much old. I mean, Iran's 23 or
he's 20. Sure. He'll be 26.
What?
No.
No way.
Look it up.
Look it up right now.
1991 is when he was born.
Really? Well, then
Iran is 22.
22.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's a year younger than me. Well, then I was wrong.
Yeah, so I don't think the age is really an issue with me because both Mike Minor and Julio Teheran are both pretty young. They're the best pitchers in our rotation, so age isn't really a worry for me. What worries me is just how many pitches it takes him to get through a game.
Well, I mean, with
and
age,
if he can be more efficient with that, then I think it's fine to just keep riding him there and just be careful with his pitches and as he goes through the season, you don't want to burn him out because I don't know how many innings he's thrown in the past. And that's really my only concern with him, because even in the majors, he's been striking out batters at a huge rate. He's got like 10.26 K per 9 right now, and his walk rate isn't even that bad, at just right under 3. So if Beachy and Mahalam are still struggling, then I'm perfectly fine keeping Alex Wood in the starting rotation.
Yeah, I have no problem with Wood at all. He's been great. His stuff's good. He seems pretty poised to me. He's been throwing a lot of pitches, but that's just what young pitchers do. I mean, you saw Teheran tonight only went 5 innings. Yep. He struck out 11, but he threw a lot of pitches. Guy was fouling him off on like a 12-pitch at bat where every one of them was strike. You know, there's sometimes you can't control it. We'll learn. He's young. You know, we got time to play for the rest of the year. Basically, the tryout. I'm hoping Beachy picks it up because obviously we got our 1 and 2 with Minor and Iran, but the next couple spots are going to be the question.
Yeah, with Alex Wood, I'm really just concerned about him in the postseason, especially with how many pitches he throws and like that. But with Mike Minor and Julio Teheran, they're definitely our best two pitchers. They should be 1-2 in the postseason. But I'm just worried about who's going to step up as the number 3 guy because we really have just guys kind of floundering around at the back of the rotation at this point. So who do you guys think, if you had to predict, who's our number 3 pitcher in the postseason? Who's gonna be the guy to step up?
I'd go with Medlin.
That's my thought as well. I like Chris Medlin. His previous success with the team, and he really hasn't been as bad as Mahalam and Beachy have been. He hasn't been great, but he's been pretty solid for the most part.
Right. It just depends, too, on what we do with Beachy the rest of the year. You know, they say with Tommy John, the control and command is the last thing to come back, and his stuff was there. We saw dull. I mean, he said, I saw somebody tweet out that he had as many swings and misses on his first start back as he did on almost any start last year. So his stuff is there, just his command and location wasn't. And if he can get that back, he can definitely be that third guy. But with that option, I think when you have Beachy, Mahalem, Medlin, and Woods all there, say for the playoffs, you could almost keep a guy down the bullpen in case, like say Woods starts and he throws, you know, 70 pitches in three innings. You know, you can just bring in a Mahalem to back him up, or you know, whichever guy you want to keep out there, you can kind of piggyback their starts. You don't want to do that for the playoffs, obviously, but that's something that's an option.
Yep, definitely. And I know there's kind of a lot of talk about the Braves rotation and how we don't really have an ace, and that's died down a little bit, I guess, with Mike Minor doing so well. But do you guys think that the Braves need an ace pitcher to do well in the playoffs, or do you think that just having a solid all-around rotation is good enough? Because we're going to come up against some Kershaws and just really good starting pitchers, like with the Cardinals. You got Wainwright that you might have to face in the playoffs. What do you guys think about not having really a top-tier pitcher like that, or do you think Minor is that guy? Or say Aaron.
I mean, I would argue that right now those two guys, I wouldn't say they're quite aces yet, but they're okay. Maybe Kershaw would be like an ace of spades. Well, they might be like an ace of hearts or something. You know, I mean, they're, you know,
so one
right on the edge.
They're right there.
They're developing into that.
I know there was some talk on Twitter today where it was Sisson from Talking Chop now, I guess. He said he thinks Miner's probably the seventh best pitcher in the National League. So
that, I mean, before or after the boy band practice?
What?
I'm just playing.
I didn't hear what you said.
No, I think Minor is definitely an ace. I don't see why how it can't be. But quite honestly, if we keep hitting like this, it ain't gonna matter who's pitching.
Yeah, our that's true.
That's a true point. I mean, I think Mike Minor has definitely stepped up and has been the proverbial ace this year. I mean, to put it in basketball terms, you look at the Indiana Pacers, they didn't have a single stud on their team, and they took the Miami Heat to seven games. Well, you look at a team like the Braves who don't have like that standout ace pitcher, but they've been getting the job done essentially almost all year. There was a time where they went through a rough stretch, but I mean, every pitching rotation goes through that. So I mean, for the most part, I like to think that the Braves don't have that ace. They have two guys that have ace-like quality stuff, like Minor and Tehran, who've really impressed me this year.
Yeah, and you could argue that that's even better, having two guys that are right up there instead of just the one labeled ace. And
that's when your bullpen is the best in baseball, right?
Yeah, after the seventh inning, it's just game over basically every night. And well, when you guys touched on the offense, I wanted to talk about the lineup a little bit. That's been the craze on Twitter lately. Everyone just pumped up about this new lineup we have with Hayward leading off and Simmons in the 8-hole, Chris Johnson moving up a little bit, and Justin Upton batting second. I honestly didn't think that Freddie would ever put Justin Upton in the 2-hole, but it seems to be working out extremely well. What do you guys think about it?
I'd like to think it actually made Freddie Freeman look even better. I mean, look at this series. You've got guys like Hayward, who's consistently got on base his entire career, and you've got Justin Upton, who can hit for power, hitting right behind him. Those two guys get on. They both have speed for the most part, and then you have Freddie Freeman, who just hits the ball all over the field, especially with two strikes. You know, you get a guy like Hayward in scoring position, it's almost automatic that Freeman is going to drive at least one of those two in at any given point in the game. And I think, you know, it's shown that in this Colorado series.
Yeah, well, Freddie has beaten up on Colorado his entire career, and it's awesome.
Yeah, he hated Barney as a kid.
But, actually,
another game update, game break update here.
Whoa.
Chris Johnson, 3 out of 5 tonight. Up to 346.
Yeah, that's a good segue to talking about Chris Johnson. One of the things that I thought was hilarious, I guess you could use the word hilarious for this lineup, is that the NL leader in batting is hitting sixth in the lineup. And that just shows you how just how deep our lineup is. And I love him in that spot. And you've got guys like Chris Johnson and Dan Uggla deep in the lineup, which really gives us a scoring threat the entire time, and that's really what you want.
Not only that, but it's also benefited Andrelton Simmons moving down in the lineup as well.
Yeah.
I mean, look, Chris Johnson, at first I was kind of skeptical at first because, I don't know how he would have fit with that platoon with Juan Francisco, but I always thought that Chris Johnson had a better bat. I mean, even watching him when he played against Cincinnati with Houston, watching him, he was always one of the best hitters on that team. Then he went to Arizona and kind of dropped off. But now that he's back and he's got guys in front of him, that are just as dangerous as he is, it's benefited him. And he's also, like you said, he's got guys like Dan Uggla, who's, obviously not hitting as well, but he still has that potential threat of going deep. So, I think it's, the best thing that's ever happened to Chris Johnson, it's sad to say, was, Juan Francisco getting DF designated for assignment and then Ramiro Pena getting hurt.
Yeah.
I think one thing that you kind of touched on a little bit is Simmons moving down in a lineup, and ever since he's been in the eight hole, he's been really putting things together as a play, and I think some of that might be that he's not pressing so much from being at the top of the lineup.
Yeah.
So now he's hitting solid at the bottom of the lineup.
Yeah.
And then our pitcher's not an automatic out either.
And not only that. I mean,
yeah, Tehran, it's crazy watching him at the plate.
Not only that, but your eight-hole hitter is kind of considered one of your more weaker hitters. Well, Anderson is not necessarily a weaker hitter, but he's going to see probably a lot more fastballs than off-speeds and curveballs than anything.
Yeah, that's definitely key with Simmons being there, because he has just a terrible approach. He doesn't like to take walks. He doesn't ever strike out because he swings at everything. So it's really much better for him to be in the 8-hole because, like you said, he's seeing a lot more fastballs with the pitcher right behind him. In the past 7 days, he's slugging .536. He's got 10 hits, 3 doubles, a triple, and he doesn't have any home runs, but he went through that period where he had like 3 home runs in 4 games or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's been really nice to see from him.
Were you going to say something, Eric?
Yeah, I gotta stop y'all just for a second here. I'm not going to get off track here, I promise. Y'all got to stop in eight hole.
What was that?
Eight hole.
Say 8-5 or something. Just 8-hole doesn't sound.
He just Simmons fits well deep down in that 8-hole.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a good one. It's not a good
the one. 8 spot. Simmons excels in the 8 spot of the lineup. But yeah, I think it's definitely better.
Lineup is
and
awesome,
he's right? He's the guy you definitely don't want leading off, and with Freddie, it's either 8 or 1 for Simmons, which is baffling, but it's good to see him in the 8 spot.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Game's over, by the way. 11-2. They scored 5 more in the 8th inning.
So that's
even, Cunningham got a hit.
Cunningham's been stepping up as well, 2-for-3 in his first 3 games.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's obvious that we have some talent down in the minor leagues as well.
Yeah, it's
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, he's good. There's no reason they can stand that should ever be in a Braves uniform again. So he's awful.
Who?
Jose Constanza.
Yeah, exactly. There's no. He's. I don't understand that. Especially once Schaefer gets back, I think we'll see the last of Constanza.
Yeah.
And speaking of the minor league guys, what do you guys think of Turdoslovich coming up? Because he's done extremely well in limited time with the team so far. He's batting over 507 at bats, I think.
Great to have off the bench. I think he'll be great.
It's a tiny sample, but yeah, it's good to have him switch hitting off the bench.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how well he plays defensively, but really all I'm excited about is the bat, so...
Yeah, he'll be a good off the bench for the postseason, I think. I don't think he'll ever see the field, but he'll be a good option, especially being a switch hitter. We could use another left-handed bat off the bench probably, but that's about the only thing I'd really complain about this team right now.
I guess we could talk about Evan Gattis and his hitting lately. It hasn't been as good as we've seen this season. Do you guys think that's because pitchers are finally adjusting to him? Do you think that's because he's starting more and he really just excels in a pinch hitting role? What do you think about Evan Gattis? He's hitting 207, 220, 233, 207, past seven games, which is definitely not killing the ball by any means.
Yeah, no, I think his hitting hasn't been too bad. He's been getting a lot of hits. He just hasn't really been hitting for the power that we saw earlier in the year. That, and he's not taking any pitch. I know in his first three at bats tonight, he saw like three pitches. You know, he swung at the first pitch three times. That's not good. I think the word's getting out on him a little bit, but for a rookie, I've still just been ridiculously impressed with the way he plays. And I think his defense has been, while not great, better than I expected in the outfield. I mean, he's got a good arm. He gets the ball. He can throw people out, and his catching's been better than I thought too. So, you know, A+ for Gattis and just about everything he's done.
Yeah, I think it's going to be good for him to get back into a pinch-hitting role, though. I don't think it'll be good for the team long-term to have him hitting every day, especially with pitchers adjusting to him. And if he can make the adjustment back and kind of get back on the roll, then that would be good. But I'd like to see BJ Upton come back and get time.
He's going to have to do it every day next year. That's what he needs
to Let's not talk about that.
I don't want to mention it.
Let's just enjoy Ryan McCann because he's been killing it as well.
Yeah.
Did you guys think Ryan McCann, yeah, his power coming back has been – I know we talked about this before, but it's great to see Ryan McCann hitting a lot of home runs this year. And he is going to be a rich man in 2014.
What if we could just give BJ's money to Brian?
I'm not sure BJ would let us do that, but that would be nice.
I was texting Purser the other day, and I was like, hey, you know what would be cool? If we could just give Brian BJ's contract.
Yeah, I mean, really, that would be perfect. Because that's probably how much he's going to get, if not more.
Do you guys think we have any chance at all re-signing Brian McCann? Because The only way I can see us signing McCann is if we don't bring back Tim Hudson and McCann gives us a huge discount. Because Huddy will save us a lot of money if they don't bring him back. But still, I still don't think we have enough with Dan Uggla and BJ Upton and all the young guys we have to lock up.
Yeah, I mean, in theory, I guess Hudson will come off the books. I don't think they're going to re-sign Mahalem. I don't know. I don't think. I wish they would. I just don't think it's going to happen because I think somebody like the Yankees or the Rangers, they're going to pay him $18 million a year to come DH and catch, and he'll be able to hit every day. And, you know, I just don't think we can afford him.
It would definitely be tough to swallow, but yeah, like it's probably the more realistic option for him. It'll make his career last that much longer. He'll be paid more. So unless he just really loves Atlanta, I don't think it's going to happen. But we'll have to get into that another day. Let's just enjoy him.
Never know.
Was there anything
else?
Yeah. Was there anything else you guys wanted to touch on?
I was going to ask a question. What do you guys, on the McCann topic, I know it's putting the cart before the horse a little bit. What about the Hall of Fame chance?
Oh, I think he's got a good shot at the Hall of Fame, especially because of the position he plays, and if he can go to the American League, like you said, and get at-bats every day. I mean, he's one of the most consistent hitting catchers that have been in the league since I've been following the game. I know that's not as long as maybe some of you guys, but I think he's got a good shot. If he can continue to play and stay away from the disabled list for 8 more years, I think he's got a really good shot.
And I mean,
go ahead, Drew.
this offseason, you know, like you said, if he does go to an AL team, get to DH, he can boost his numbers. I don't know what his career numbers are at right now, but, I mean, I would imagine that even though he'll end up, you know, kind of declining a little bit as he ages, you know, just because of having the opportunity to DH and everything, his numbers are still probably stay up there as far as home runs and things like that, too.
Yeah, the power is something that I'm concerned about with him going forward because it was declining over the past couple of years, but this year has to be really good and good to see for him because the power came back. And currently he's a 279, 352, 478 hitter. He's got 171 home runs, 449 runs, 645 RBIs. I mean, he's got a good chance.
Yeah, I think you know, could you imagine him, the way he's swinging this year, playing in New York with that short right field?
The home runs would go up 40 so much.
He would hit 40 home runs. He would. Without a doubt. But,
yeah, and actually I just pulled up Johnny Bench's numbers to compare them to Brian McCann. And Brian's slash is actually better all across the board currently. I know that might go down, but he's definitely right in line with it. Bench ended up with 389 homers, and McCann's at 171 right now. So it really just depends on how long he can hold up. But
yeah,
as long as he's healthy, I think he's got a really good shot.
There really hadn't been a lot of great hitting catchers over the history. Mm-hmm. I mean, Piazza's probably the best hitting catcher of all time. And he might have been on the Roy. Who knows? But I think McCann has a really good shot.
Brad, what do you think?
I think you guys essentially just touched everything that I was going to make a point of. If he stays consistent, you know, 25, 30 home runs every year, I mean, then I don't see him – I see him at least being a first, if not second ballot Hall of Famer. But, I mean, you know, age, you know, the ball gets a little faster when you get older and your eyesight's not as good. So, I mean, if he were to able to hit anywhere between 25 to 30 home runs – wherever he plays next season, whether it be in Atlanta or wherever, you know, I think that you can make a very strong case that McCann could very well be a Hall of Famer whenever his time comes.
Very cool. All right.
Well, he's never even hit 25 in a season to this point, so I doubt he's going to start.
Well, if he goes to the Yankees.
That's short right field. Really, Texas is a good hitter's park, too. And they were inquiring about him before the trade deadline. So they obviously got their eyes on him.
I'm sure a lot of teams will have their eye on him this offseason.
Especially with the DH, too. He'd get those extra at-bats.
All right. Anything else? Anything to be watching for in the coming days?
One little stat before we go. The Braves are now 7-0 since they introduced the Waffle House stand.
Yeah, I heard about that. I didn't. I think I was late to this.
What'd you say, Eric?
She'll ever be known as the Waffle House home fan. 7-0.
Oh, we could talk about that before we go. The home road splits of the team.
Yeah, that's why we need to keep busting ass and you know, keep winning, get that home field advantage because obviously it's worked for us this year.
Yeah, I know a lot of people have been talking about how we just need to put it on cruise control now and make sure the guys are healthy and avoid injuries, but I agree with you. We definitely need to keep the gas down and try to get as many wins as we can because the NL Central has some really good teams, and with the way the Dodgers have been playing lately, we definitely need to get a home field advantage.
Don't rule out the Pirates either.
Yes. I actually like watching the Pirates. It's a good story.
It's a great story, but they're only 17 wins away from actually being over the 500 mark for the first time in what seems like eternity.
20 years? 21?
21 years, yeah. Crazy. I'm now with the Royals 1-9. Did they win today? Did they play today?
They played today.
Is that 10 in a row or is that 9 in a row?
Nine. I think that's what Chip Carey said.
like a blast back in the 80s with the Royals, Pirate, Pirates.
Baseball's fun again in those towns.
Yes, it's good to see them. And Indians, too. They've done pretty well.
Yeah, Indians are good.
All right, I think that about wraps it up for us today. So thanks, you guys, for joining for the conversation. And hopefully we can get Harris and Brad Roland and a couple of the other guys on.